This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Today, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through Genesis, chapters 23 through 26.
It was by this well that God had appeared to Hagar earlier, after she had been kicked out of Sarah's tent. And the name Beher Lahai Roi means well of the living one who sees. You know, it's interesting that Abraham was always building altars, while Isaac, we'll find, majored on digging wells. Isaac left behind sources of water where others could be nourished. You see, Abraham worshiped, whereas Isaac watered. Abraham gave God praise. Isaac helped other people quench their thirst. And both men were remembered as men of faith. We need both attitudes, really. The upward look of worship and the outward look of witness. We need to both worship and water and share and become a source of refreshment to others. Verse 12. Now this is the genealogy of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's maidservant, bore to Abraham. And these were the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, and there's Ishmael's sons for you, 12 sons in all. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these were their names, by their towns and their settlements, 12 princes according to their nations. These were the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. They dwelt from Havilah as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt as you go toward Assyria. He died in the presence of all his brethren. Verse 19. This is the genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, and the sister of Laban the Syrian. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Notice, God gave Rebekah a child when her husband Isaac prayed for her. Husbands, you are the priest in your home. And God wants you to be at the business of praying for your wife and for your children. Guys, we like being king of our castle, don't we? But what about priest? We like pointing our finger and telling people what to do, ordering people around. We like being king. But can we drop to our knees and lift other people up in prayer and be the priest of our home? Twice I've shared this verse with infertile couples, and I've challenged the husband to plead with God for his wife. And twice God has answered those husbands' prayers. You remember David Holloman? Big David Holloman? He was the result of one night his parents had come up to me and they were talking about they were having problems having a child. And I took Steve to this verse and I said, Steve, have you prayed? Have you pleaded with God for your wife to have a child? He said, I haven't. And so they walked off, and a few weeks later, he called me, and he said, Sandy, I'm so excited. We're expecting a baby. Did you pray, Steve? Yeah, I prayed. Did some other things, too, but I prayed. Men, let me encourage you. If your wife is going through a barren time, maybe not physically, but perhaps spiritually, maybe she's unhappy. Maybe she's become discontent. It's just a barren time for her. Hey, you need to serve your wife by interceding for her in prayer. Be the priest in your home, not just the king of your castle. Verse 22, but the children struggled together within her. Now notice he says children. Rebekah had twins, twin boys, Esau and Jacob. And apparently they didn't get along even in utero. Jewish legend says that the boys tried to kill each other even in their mother's womb. They were at each other's throats from the start. And she said, If all is well, why am I like this? Rebecca has noticed some prenatal complications. And so she puts in a call to her doctor, Dr. God. She asks him for a diagnosis. So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. Now, according to custom, that never happened. The firstborn son had all of the rights in Oriental culture, but not in God's family. For here the older son Esau is said he will one day serve the younger son Jacob. And this was prophetic of the future of these two nations. Esau, the father of the Edomites, will be dominated for most of their history by Jacob's descendants, the Jews. Verse 24. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb, and the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau, which means hairy. I mean, little Esau looked like a bear cub. Hair all over him. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Jacob was born second. And he tried to take his older brother even as they were exiting the womb. He came out holding on to Esau's heel. And the word Jacob means heel catcher. That's what it means. Later, it came to be synonymous with a scoundrel or a crook or a con artist, a heel catcher. That's what it meant. And it became descriptive of Jacob's character, as we'll see. Verse 27, so the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field. But Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. Esau was a rugged guy, a man's man. As Arnold would say, Jacob was a girly man. He was more cultured, more domesticated. Esau liked to hunt. He liked to fish. He liked to do manly stuff. Jacob liked to cook and sew and cross stitch. And here's what happened. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. But Rebekah loved Jacob. There's going to be some big problems in this family. They're playing favorites. The daddy loves Esau. The mama loves Jacob. Oh, boy. Apparently Isaac loved the taste of venison stew. And so he gravitated toward the wild man, Esau. But the mild man, Jacob, he became a mama's boy. He gravitated toward Rebekah. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field. And he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary. Therefore, his name was called Edom, which means red. So he's red and he's hairy. And apparently, Esau comes in. He's been hunting all day. He's famished. And he loved that reddish stew that Jacob had simmering in the crock pot. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. Now, remember, this birthright, Isaac's inheritance, was more than just a toolbox. It was more than a few shares of stock. This isn't like an inheritance we think about. This birthright included the covenant that God had made with Abraham. It had been passed on to Isaac. And now, who would it go to? Would it go to Jacob? Would it go to Esau? Remember what was included in that covenant? Sod, seed, salvation. God promised Abraham a piece of land. He promised that his seed would be a great nation, and he promised that through that nation, the world would be blessed. Sod, seed, salvation, special nation status to the end of the age is what's on the line here. And Esau traded it. Get this now. Esau traded the Abrahamic covenant for a bowl of Campbell's chunky lentil soup. Can you believe it? You see, this was Esau's downfall. The man was physically oriented rather than spiritually oriented. He would rather feed his belly than feed his soul on God's blessings. He would rather have temporal pleasure than to have eternal blessing. He was physically oriented rather than spiritually and eternally oriented. And Esau said, "Look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me?" Then Jacob said, "Swear to me as of this day." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob, and Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank and arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Certainly, this is a pitiful revelation into the soul of Esau. This is a superficial, this is a hollow man. Of course, Jacob doesn't fare much better from the episode. He's a heel catcher. He's deceptive. He's manipulative. He cons his brother out of a birthright. This might rank up there as the greatest swindle of all time. Jacob and all of his descendants forever received God's greatest blessing in exchange for a measly bowl of chili. It's amazing here. Remember, though, Jacob didn't have to be this conniving. Back in verse 23, you remember, God promised Rebekah, "The older shall serve the younger." It was God's will from the very beginning for Jacob to inherit the birthright. The problem here, though, is that he takes matters into his own hands. Guys, it is through faith and patience that we inherit the promises of God. Jacob was guilty of what the Bible calls walking in the flesh, taking matters into your own hands, trying to accomplish God's will your way in your time. And the works of the flesh always yield pain, trust me. And Jacob's actions here end up alienating Esau and creating a deep-seated hatred between these two men and eventually ripping this family apart. Jacob was a swindler. He was a thief. Deception was his middle name. But apparently, God saw, at least he saw in Jacob, a desire for spiritual things. And I think that's why God was attracted to Jacob. At least he wanted God's blessing. Esau didn't care about anybody's blessing. He could do it all himself. He was a man's man. Jacob had faith. Esau didn't. And apparently that was the deciding difference. And that's why God will later say in Malachi chapter 1, "Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated." It wasn't because Jacob was more honest or more moral than his brother. He was a heel catcher. But to the contrary, if ever there was a person who needed God's grace, it was Jacob. No, the blessing went to Jacob because he had faith and he trusted in God's grace. Once there was a woman who approached C.H. Spurgeon and she said, "I cannot understand why God would say that he hated Esau." And Spurgeon responded by saying, "Madam, that is not my difficulty. My trouble is trying to understand how he could love Jacob." Chapter 26. There was a famine in the land, besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Then the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." God repeats the promise that he had made to Abraham, but now he passes it on to Isaac. And this is such a strategic passage. Understand, Islam teaches that the Abrahamic covenant was passed on to Ishmael. And thus the land belongs to the Arabs, the descendants of Ishmael, not the Jews. But the Bible teaches over and over again that God confirms this covenant with Abraham and then with his son Isaac, not Ishmael. and ultimately to Isaac's descendant, Jacob, and then to Jacob's descendants, the 12 tribes of Israel, or the Jews. Verse 6, so Isaac dwelt in Gerar, and the men of the place, the Philistines, asked about his wife, and he said, she is my sister. Have we heard that before? She is my sister, for he was afraid to say she is my wife, because he thought, lest the men of this place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold. We have heard this before. This is the philosophy that Isaac's parents, Abraham and Sarah, adopted whenever they traveled among the pagan nations. And now their son Isaac is following in their footsteps. Parents, beware. The apple never falls far from the tree. It's been said, don't tell your child to follow in your footsteps until you make sure you've covered your tracks. You know, kids are prone to repeat the blunders of their parents. Here, Isaac does the same thing his daddy Abraham did. He marries a pretty girl. He gets scared. And then he tells lies to save his own skin and treats her in a very selfish way. Verse 8. Now, it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. They were smooching. Right out there in the courtyard, they were smooching and necking and kissing and all. And then Abimelech called Isaac and said, quite obviously, she is your wife. So how could you say she is my sister? And Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. And Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us. A godly man is being rebuked by a pagan king. Isn't that amazing? And so Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. An executive order is issued that protects Isaac and Rebekah. God will protect you if you just trust him. You don't have to lie. Verse 12. Then Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. This isn't a blessing Isaac deserved. It comes on the heels of a colossal failure. I mean, he's just lied. He's just embarrassed himself in front of this Philistine king. But as with all God's blessings, Isaac is a recipient of grace. Guys, understand, God blesses Isaac not because he's worthy, but because Isaac has faith. And God blesses you, not because you're worthy, but because you trust in his grace. That's why we're to walk by faith. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous, for he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great number of servants. I mean, God just kept pouring on the blessings, and God will pour the blessings on your life if you'll just have faith and trust him. And so the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, and they had filled them with earth. And Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. Then Isaac departed from there and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. He called them by the names which his father had called them. Now remember their signature traits. Abraham built what? Altars. Isaac dug wells. Abraham dug wells that the Philistines had covered over. And now Isaac goes back and he unplugs those same wells, which really provides an interesting picture for us. You see, Satan, guys, is like the Philistines. And he wants nothing more than to plug up the sources of spiritual refreshment. He plugs up the sources of those places where we go to meet with God. He buries the joys of prayer. He covers up the joy of worship. He takes this joy of Bible study and he buries it under mounds of tradition or neglect. And often it takes a second generation, a new generation, like an Isaac, to go back and to redig that well and to rediscover and reemphasize the significance of what was lost. Verse 19. Also, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found a well of running water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water is ours." And so he called the name of the well Esek, because they quarreled with him. The word Esek means quarrel. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one also. So he called its name Sitna, or hostility. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehoboth, because he said, "For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." And of course, the word Rehoboth means spaciousness. Isaac finally finds some space, some rest, some peace. You know, Isaac's life is a good example to us. The world that we live in is full of obstacles. Guys, there's many detours. But understand, when one door shuts, look for another door to open. Hey, just dig another well. If you're having problems tonight, if a door's closed or been slammed in your face, dig another well. If you've been fired from a job, dig another well. Just keep moving on. Keep looking for that next door to open when one door closes. Keep digging wells, and eventually you'll find your Rehoboth, your peace. Verse 23. Then he went up from there to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for my servant Abraham's sake." And again, God is transferring the Abrahamic covenant now to Isaac. And so he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. They settled there in Beersheba. Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Ahusath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the commander of his army. And Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" But they said, "We have certainly seen that the Lord is with you." So we said, "Let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, since we have not touched you, and since we have done nothing to you but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord." And so he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Then they arose early in the morning and swore an oath with one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. It came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him about the well which they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." And so he called it Sheba, which means oath. And therefore the name of the city is Beersheba, or the well of the oath, to this day. Verse 34. When Esau was 40 years old, he took his wives, Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. It was another example of Esau's lack of desire for spiritual things. He went off and he married two pretty girls. They had a lot of money. They were real popular. Could show him a good time. But they didn't love the Lord. They were idolaters. They were Canaanites. You see, he had a taste for the things of the world, but he didn't have a desire for God. And that was Esau's downfall. He married wives that had no love for God. And apparently here we're told it broke his parents' heart, as it will break any parent's heart if their kids are attracted to a sweetheart, a wife, a fiance who doesn't know the Lord, who doesn't love the Lord. That'll break your parents' heart, guys. Don't be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. Choose to date, choose to partner with and to love and to marry a fellow believer. I think that's the desire of every parent's heart for their kids.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.